neglect to offer due respect to the demigods. One may not be a devotee of the demigods, but that does not mean that you should not be, that you should be disrespectful to them. For example, a Vaishnava is not a devotee of Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma, but he is duty bound to offer all respects to such highly positioned demigods. According to Vaishnava philosophy, one should offer respect even to an ant. So then what is there to speak of such exalted persons such as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma? In the Padma Purana it is said, Krishna or Hari is the master of all demigods, and therefore he is always worshipable. But this does not mean that one should not offer respect to demigods. So in other words, one is respectful to the demigods, but one does not worship them. Respect to the demigods because of their position, they are servants of the Lord, and they are doing, you know, they're holding big offices for the Lord in managing the universe. So they're to be respected. The Vaishnavas respect all living entities. Respect means that whatever is their particular, nature and need, then that is respected, right? The ant wants to get to the other side of the sidewalk. That's respected. We don't step on it because we're bigger, right? So they're respected. So if we're respecting all living entities, let alone, that's just generic, let alone those who then have positions that are respected, like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, who are great devotees of the Lord also. Does this make any sense? Right? So we're not worshipping them, but they're being respected. You know, also?
Respect as in even in terms of not only because they're devotees. Does respect mean in relative terms that let someone come to me and I will respect them, or should we go to them and then respect? And
it just depends what the situation is. If they're a respectable person that you are obligated to offer respect to, then you go to them. But if it's not like that, then when you meet, you know, someone, then at that time, then you deal with them respectfully, right? Respectfully means that you are aware of their needs and you're respecting that. So that may mean that they're senior to you, junior to you, equal to you, so you're going to follow the etiquette according to that. But the respect meaning that, I mean, their position and their needs, that is then a consideration in the equation of etiquette. Does that make sense? Like you respect the small child by dealing with them appropriately for who they are, what they expect. You know what I'm saying? The child doesn't understand this assembly, what's going on, anything like that. So therefore, then, you know, they're kept quiet by waiting to keep quiet, the children quiet nicely. You engage them, you distract them, you do whatever is, you know, important to take care of them. It means, because it is an assembly, if they behave badly, that's another thing that they're corrected, they're explained. But otherwise, they don't know what it is, so they don't know what they're disturbing or not. So then you generally will distract and other things. You make sure they don't disturb, of course, but you work with them in such a way to, that you can properly deal with their position, right, and elevate them so with time they understand and appreciate and can take advantage. But you don't use the same standards on yourself on them, right? You have the same standards that you want to get them to, but they won't understand it. So you deal with, just like, let's say the mathematician, he understands quantum physics, but if he's teaching a first grader, you know, he deals with them on that level, right? But it's not that he won't teach them as quickly as possible and bring them to his own standard. Does that make sense? You know? So that respect doesn't necessarily mean worship. Worship is the Supreme Lord. Worship is the senior Vaishnavas or whoever is due. Worship is the Lord's associates. But respect, that's for everyone. Right? You respect them as a living entity. You respect their rights.
Just an extension to that thought. Let's say if it's the field of Lord Shiva,
who
we treat as
Parameshwar.
So
this is the what?
Lord Shiva.
What day is it?
Appearance. So if if we visit the temple just to pay respect and not worship, so just being a devotee is safe, like any harm as we're not worshipping but just paying our obeisance and not respect on such an.
Yeah, I mean that's some of what we do. We don't have these separate people for worshipping or achievement or something. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Yeah. I mean the point is if you have some family tradition or something that you do. But the point is then you're dealing with him as a devotee. In other words, as a demigod, he's only offered some respect like that. You might, you know, offer respect or offer obeisances, but that's where it basically ends. If you are worshiping him as a devotee, as the supreme devotee of Lord Vishnu, then you can do something beyond that. You know what I'm saying? Then it's like what offer respect you would offer to the senior Vaishnavas, to the gurus, things like that. But unless that's, you know, one of your family traditions like that, and others are doing this, no real need. You know what I'm saying? We generally. Because the Pancharatric system is that you need to respect, as far as the acharyas go, for us would be the father acharya and four spiritual masters back. So you have the guru, param guru, what's next? The param guru, parameshti guru, mahaguru, no, parameshti is the last. Guru, param guru, mahaguru, and parameshti. Have those four like that. Then you have your own spiritual masters connecting to these personalities. But before that, then there's not as elaborate worship is required. Right? Because otherwise some lines, you know, you have 32 in our line, so then that becomes a little difficult. Does that make sense? You know, some have more, 56, you know, stuff like that. Because for us then there's, you know, Brahma. Brahma, Narad, Vyas, who was just recently. Others, it's, you know, they're going. The four Kumaras down to the Kumsavatar, this, that, and then it comes through and you get 56 people before you get there. You know, so like that, it can get very, very big. Okay? Is that any other questions? Yes.
Talk about
Ganapati. Ganapati. The worship of the spiritual master takes care of that, because Ganapati, he removes obstacles like that. So then for us, then, the worship of the spiritual master or worship of Vishvakshena, if you want to be technical, in other words, if you have to, you're doing rituals of which, before you start, then you install the pot, you know, like that, and that's then the worship of Ganesh, then you would worship Vishvakshena, who's the commander-in-chief of Vaikuntha army. So he's the Lord's eternal associate. Everything happens with him. So you have Lakshmi on one side, you have him the other. Like that. But if you're not doing this technical worship, then you're worshiping the spiritual master that's taken care of. Yes.
Who are those four gurus? The Mahaguru, Parameshti Guru?
It means you have the guru, his guru, his guru, and his guru. Paraguru, Mahaguru, Parameshti. So that would be for us, the Yashiva Prabhupada, your Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, your Jagannathas, I mean, the Gaurav Kishore Babaji, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, Jagannathas Babaji. So that takes that's the five. You know what I'm saying? Guru, and then. Before coming to? There is no need, then who's on your own? You know what I'm saying? The point is like this. It's a body. The demigods represent the arms of the Lord, so they take care of all the universal affairs. So technically speaking, if you actually want to worship the demigod as demigod, unless you worship all 33 million, then that would be considered offensive, because why you worship something and not another, you know. I worship the guy's hand, his left little toe, and his right earlobe. and then neglect everything else, you know, wouldn't you feel a little weird? Yeah, okay. So then, so like that, that's the idea. Means if you actually want to worship the demigods, you have to worship all 33 million. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. Therefore, it's much easier just to worship the devotees and the Supreme Lord, because the Supreme Lord, all the demigods, they are, performing the offices of the Lord. Right? In other words, you want to respect the government, you deal with the prime minister, you don't have to deal with all the other ministers. Right? The government won't feel that there's been an insult. But if you deal not with the prime minister, you deal with this minister and neglect that minister, then you might have trouble. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, there's no need to worship all the demigods. You don't need to keep them on the altar. They're not going to be. You know what I'm saying? Because their Lord is there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But the tradition is telling, like, we have to worship, I don't know how long,
like, so long time, you know, maybe you've been smoking cigarettes. And so, is that something important?
But should we stop that?
The point is, instead, who is this that you are worshiping that is so important? Because you don't even know who's on the altar. Pictures are there.
My father, grandfather,
but you have no idea even who they are. Not like the modern society where you know, they're so concerned about one living entity and then they bother another. Right? That doesn't work, you know. It doesn't work like that. You know, save a blue whale, but, you know, eat the cows. You know, it doesn't quite work like that. Does this make sense? You know? So then we're very careful like this. So one is very careful in etiquette, trying to deal in such a way to not give the disturbance. Right? You don't try to act in a way that would cause. So one has to consider one's actions completely, otherwise then one may find it by one's action that people become disturbed. So one has to consider all the different things. Any questions? Yes.
Just a question, this one, like, when you say that don't hurt animals, sometimes it just comes to mind that you take medicine or some like cosmetic products that like animal tested.
Animal tested, that you can get stuff that's not animal tested. You know, what you can't remove is what you listed. You know, so it's like, therefore you can test it on someone else, you know what I'm saying? If you look at it this way, okay, if animal tested, you know that lipstick is great, right? Does that mean that the other kangaroos, you know, really got, you know, that's enthusiastic when they saw the first kangaroo? Or, you know what I'm saying? So it's not, it's something that can be avoided, is what's the point.
Sometimes medicines are not.
The point is like this. If you want to find an exception, you have enough brain to do that. If you want to understand what we say, that's another application of the intelligence. You know what I'm saying? Is you're saying it has to be done. A body shop makes tons of money. One of the things they're famous for is they don't test anything. And they have cosmetics beyond what you want to buy your wife. So there's plenty of stuff there. You know what I'm saying? And if you're into kissing fish scales, then hey, get some nice, you know, modern lipstick for your wife. Because that's what makes it shiny. Fish scales. You ever wonder why it has that sheen? That's fish scales. So unless you're into stuff that is not made that way, that's how your standard stuff will be made. So, you know, it's up to you. You like fish? Hey, if you're that golly, go for it. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, use the brains. Your aspirin had to be tested on, you know, 257, you know, African monkeys or something. Point is whether it's tested or not, it will break your blood vessels. So I'm saying, you know, you read the list of what's on there. So. Walk into the temple, right? And one will do that without shoes on your feet. It's just a proper for everybody else who's coming to the temple, show up in your palanquin, show up in your limousine, show up in whatever you like, you know, your bulldozer or whatever. But when you come into the temple, then Krishna's not going to be impressed by anything you come in, so you might as well not try. Two, one should not fail to observe the various festivals for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Janmashtami and Ratha Yatra. So those who are organizing the temple affairs should see that, you know, what festivals that they can properly arrange for and they should take care of. And others, as much as they can, then should try to attend, because those are the times when we can do that extra service or extra, you know, endeavor that we may not be able to do at other times. It's something we can focus on, so it makes it very easy. Three, one should not avoid bowing down before the deity. Right? You know, you have to just come in, you just forgot your bags, you just run in and get it, you just run out, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't offer your obeisances. Right? The deity is there, offer your obeisances. Don't, you know, come up with so many reasons why we have something more important to do. Four, one should not enter the temple to worship the Lord without having washed one's hands and feet after eating. So then, because of eating, then hands, feet, these things may get dirty, so you come to the temple and then it's dirty. You can't touch anything, you can't deal with anything properly, so you won't be able to properly do worship and everything. So that one actually is able to properly perform service, then one should always be clean after eating. Five, one should not enter the temple in a contaminated state. This question we discussed the other day. According to Vedic literature, if someone dies in the family, the whole family becomes contaminated for some time, according to its status. For example, if the family is Brahmana, the contamination period is 12 days. For the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, it is 15 days. For the Shudras, 30 days. So this is mentioned, this is coming from Manu. So that's basically for, you know, general persons who are going to be very much affected. In other words, if you're affected by the loss, then by coming to the temple, if you're not even going to notice the deed, you're going to be so much lamenting or only thinking about the person that's lost, then that kind of stuff, you take care of, absorb yourself in that. Then when the mind is peaceful and cleared after this time period, then you come before the deity, then you'll be able to properly relate with the Lord, offer your proper prayers and everything like that. If you engage in vows, if you're worshiping the deity, if you're doing specific services for the deity, someone who's on that position of vow, then this contamination period like this doesn't apply. But still, the broader sense of the contamination means you've been in the bathroom, so you have to properly purify yourself before you come in, or you've been sleeping, so you properly purify yourself. In any state in which you might be impure, one purifies oneself, whatever is the appropriate way, before entering the temple. Any questions on these five? Yes. Your own temple at home. Basically, you would try to maintain some basic standard, you know, because it means you have a bathroom anyway, so you're going to wash your hands and things before coming out. After eating, you're going to wash. After, if you've been sleeping all night and you get up in the morning, you tend to take your bath. And, you know, you prepare yourself, then take care of the deity. So it would be basically the same. It may not be as elaborate, but the principle is the same. In other words, the Lord is pure, therefore when we deal with Him, He, you know, we deal with Him in the pure state. Then we have that common point. The friendship is based upon commonality. Right? So that friendship with the Lord, that service to the Lord, that is done because there's common elements. So that devotion, the transcendental position, following the rules, that cleanliness is also a very major aspect. Does that make sense? Or?
Yes, but I'm also thinking about, you know, like on weekends, week.
Oh, then that won't matter so much in the house.
Because you can't come there, I would think so.
Yeah, I mean, if you can, what I'm talking about is sometimes you don't see it as much here, more there's more of a concept of taking shelter in the temple. But sometimes we see in India that the loss sometimes almost drives a person to the point of insanity. so that kind of state is not very presentable. You know, so if you're in your own house and all that, that's another thing that you generally, you know, just stay where you are. But if it's a matter of you are taking shelter of the Lord, you can actually offer proper prayers, you can do so in the proper state of mind, then you don't have to worry about it. This is for that state where, even if you're looking at the deity, you'd still be seeing the person who died in your mind's eye. So then what's the use of coming for the deity then? You know, because you're not going to relate. Does that make sense? So you come for the deity when you can actually relate with the deity. So that's the basic principle. That's why it says, for example, he's not saying that this is a strict rule for Vaishnavas. For non-devotees, it is a strict rule because they are affected, because all they know is material life, so when they lose something material, it's a great loss for them. But on the spiritual platform, you know that you lose that association, but that soul hasn't gone. It's, you know, just moved on. So it's slightly different. Though, if one is still greatly affected, then one would be careful, and if one is able to control that effect, then it will work. Means you would have to take a bath and change your clothes. It means the same clothes. The main point is you're taking a bath. And don't bring any souvenirs. Point 6. One should not bow down with one hand. Right? So obeisances always mean two hands on the ground. The proper obeisance is always both hands on the ground. So if you're using 5 or using 8, then it always includes both hands. Right? Not one hand like that. It's not the method. Maybe great for martial arts, push-ups in one hand, but obeisance is always 2. 7. One should not circumambulate in front of Sri Krishna. The process of circumambulating the temple is that one should begin circumambulating from the deity's right-hand side of the temple and come around. Such circumambulation should be performed outside the temple structure at least 3 times daily. So for the deity, then it's outside, and for others, then it's not done in the temple. Right? It will be done at next. But we are not circumambulating is a method of worship in which somebody respectable is put in the middle and you go around them. So going around in circles is not circumambulating. You know what I'm saying? It's referring to a specific process of worship. You know, so specifically here then it would be that you don't circumambulate the deity in front of the deity because you have to go around the deity, so you can't do that. The other is that you wouldn't circumambulate other people in front of the deity. So it's not you're respecting, it's just one of the damages. You're responsible like that. Is that okay?
Is that the same as
Going
around the temple
worship? Yeah, it should put bait and miss that because you know so many of these things can go on like that. But the principle is that if it's being done as a formal, yeah, the technicality is that it's a spiritual master, then the spiritual master is represented as the Supreme Lord, so there's not a problem there. It's the same thing. So worshipping means washing the feet of the spiritual master from the deities is not a problem because he represents the deities. But you wouldn't use it for other persons, you know, just does that make sense? But if it's a problem for others, then do it somewhere else.
Like I noticed a lot of people do
do that, but is it okay to do it in front?
Pay obeisances in front of you?
Like to another person.
Means your general devotee is not, but a spiritual master like that, it doesn't matter. It's
so
the same thing. Because it's like this, when you worship the deity, then who are you offering? Who are you going through to worship the Lord? You know what I'm saying? Because the spiritual master represents the Lord. So in that way, you know, respecting senior devotees like that is not a problem. Your general devotees, when you just offer general obeisances, that you generally wouldn't do in front of the devotees. Because then you're just thinking of others, and the Lord's not included necessarily, other than their service of the Lord. But when you offer spiritual master, then you think your connection with the Lord. So you understand that the Lord is included in the meditation.
Is it okay to put the ambulance around Tulasi in the temple?
In the temple, but the curtains, you notice, are always closed. It's set in front of the deity. That means where he can see. It doesn't mean, you know, meaning in the physical. You know, so that's why in Tulsi Arti, the curtains, the deity curtains, are always closed. On a specific side.
Yeah, and like the right side and left side. How significant is that?
How significant? Basically, the significance is that if you want to perfect yourself in prayers, then it's important. Because prayers, basically speaking, are always offered from the right side. You know what I'm saying? If prayers aren't your specific point of, how do you say, perfection, then it doesn't really matter where you offer the prayers from. But the obeisances, then, technically, it's the right side is for the spiritual master who's present, or straight on. You understand? Either your right is facing or you're directly facing. The left, then, is for the spiritual master who's departed, the demigods, or the Supreme Lord. That's the Panchavasya rules. So that's why then for Sri Prabhupada, you come in, go to that side, offer your basin, and then you come to the deities, and on this side, you offer your basin. That's formal, right? You've already formally offered your basin, so then you're in the temple, something's going on, and the curtain's closed, you just offer basin to wherever you are. You know, unless you're in that practice, then cross the temple room and offer. Does that make sense? But that's for officially when you're offering your basin, so then you're going to be careful. What you have to find out what is where it's coming from. You know, what it's connected to. Because it's not like when you go around the deity, when you come back in front, you don't just walk by. So the idea is you don't turn your back to the deity. So that is then represented by when you're walking, then you face the deity, turn like that, then turn around. Then that means because you're going to have to turn your back in any way, but by this form, then that's the kind of like position how you don't turn your back to the deity because you made some effort. So maybe they just take that part and then who knows? If some of them come in, pull their ears, you know, knock them off, do all that kind of stuff. That's, you know, you're making yourself foolish before the Lord. Right? And so you're not coming at the great meal. That is, you know, the Spanish of this first one. One should not come in a car and paddle when you're something special. Go for a little time, pick out the tongue, and pull the ears, and go on. Like that. But that's more of a southern tradition. One should not spread his legs before the deity, because it's vulgar like that. The legs should always be closed in some way, like that.
9. One should not sit before the deity holding the ankles, elbows, or knees of one's hands. One is that they would, those are either very informal or like the elbows, then that is it's a mudra of determination that you are very fixed, you're going to be doing so much. So in front of the deity, one doesn't use that. You know what I'm saying? You know, this one standing like this, you know, put your arms like this. This determination. So some use it when doing some cultists or other things that I'm going to accomplish this, that I'm going to accomplish it. Generally, monks don't use that mantra. You know, it's like, by dependence on Guru Krishna, by their grace, then I will be able to do it. You know, even though one may be very qualified. So holding the ankles, the elbows, they're kind of more informal methods. So one is generally a little bit more formal. One finds a comfortable position. But one avoids using these particular ways of sitting. 10. One should not lie down with the deity of Krishna. 11. One should not accept prasad for the deity. That means you're coming sitting, taking a full meal. So if the pujari gives you a little prasad, then you take it there, but you go to the side and you know, take it like that. But if you're going to be eating properly like that, then that will be done in front of the curtains coil out and all. Because one is that some are not very graceful in the process. Other is that a lot of times you just become absorbed and forget about the deity. So why do that in front of the deity? The idea is when you're in front of the Lord, then you're going to interact with the Lord. So if you're not going to interact, then better to not be there. Does that make sense? It's just a natural principle of relationship. In other words, why do something that doesn't include the other person in front of us? One should never speak a lie before the deity. One should not talk very loudly before the deity. It means if you're speaking in a class or something like that, you have to speak loud enough. But if you're just sitting and chatting with friends and all that, then you don't speak loudly, talk quietly. 14, one should not talk with others before the deity. Like that. So in other words, everything should be about the deity. So talking to others means if it's in connection with service, connection with the deity, that's one thing. But if it's just you're just chit-chatting, better to go outside. 15, one should not cry or howl before the deity. So in other words, if you're lamenting or things like that, as you read before, how the Vaishnava doesn't lament in this way over the equilibrium and loss and gain. That's it. So therefore one doesn't come and cry and roll on the ground and all that. The point is, it's because of material passion that you're doing that. It's not because of some connection with the Lord. So, in other words, one can deal nicely, that's when you come and call the Lord. And, you know, or howling means, in other words, if you get excited when the moon comes up and gets full, then you do that on the roof. So, yeah.
So that's different from ecstatic thinking. So, if you're so lucky, but if you're standing before the deity, then you're overcome with
love. Yeah, that's the point here is that there's very audible sounds are being manifest. You know, not that tears come to the eyes because of devotional reasons. We're talking about making lots of noise that has to do with you're not happy. Or you are happy, you know, howling is the way of expressing it. But then, you know, one should reserve that for the chance of the mood. Like that. You know, in other words, it should be more cultured and more refined.
quarrel or fight before the deity, right? You know, that's why you always have a standard, you know, step outside. You know, it's a bunch of rules. You know, fight in front of the deity. One should not chastise anyone before the deity, like that, because Krishna is the supreme chastiser, so we don't deal. In that kind of way, some of the customs are wrong, that these things are also done outside. 18, one should not be charitable to beggars before the deity. In other words, any kind of charity is done outside, otherwise, because Krishna is the Suryadansara, he is the friend of all living entities. So we don't try to take that position. Yes, I'm so kind. Otherwise, you can see a lot of people would try to give charity in front of the deities, right? Because then, you know, it's kind of like you're getting everything at once. You're so religious, you're giving charity. People see you as a deity. You're giving out to the beggars. You know, almost like the Vaishnava's dream. You know, like that. Respect. You know, so therefore it's avoided because it wouldn't work very nicely. Like that. So that kind of thing, you know, eating others, doing that kind of charitable work or social work is done outside the temple, like that. Because then the focus can be there and it works nicely, you know, like that. You know, yeah. 19, one should not speak very harshly to others before the deity. 20, one should not wear a fur blanket before the deity. For a blanket, so specifically here, that would generally mean the one that you sleep in. You know, you're sleeping in, you know, wool blankets or that, you know, just because chadar means blanket. So most of the time you see people in the morning, they wake up, they just take the blanket they're wearing, put that on, and then move around and do certain things like that, you know, clean up, do this and that, until they, you know, get ready and take a bath. So that blanket is not what you come for. You know, so sleeping blankets are one thing, and then, you know, stuff that you wear before the deity should be something separate. Any questions?
No?
Yes.
I once was in the temple, and this Indian gentleman was chanting Hare Krishna, but then he suddenly broke into chanting these long, deep, loud Oms, and then going back to Hare Krishna back and forth like that. Is that okay
for
someone?
If you're on the phone, you know, that's okay. As part of the cure time, you may throw it out of it. You may be a little bit off the beat. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he shouldn't disturb others, you know, like that. Shouldn't disturb others. You know, because if we're doing our cure time, the form of cure time for the deity, then we should take part like that. If we want to chant home, tell them to do it after the cure time. Everybody's, you know, doing whatever they're doing, and he must have been his. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it seemed like he was a bit crazy, but afterwards I ended up talking to him, and he was quite a nice guy, and he ended up buying a full set of Bhagavatams. So.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
So that's why you're supposed to be nice.
Yeah, I never said anything to him in the temple.
Yeah. In other words, it probably worked in where he was and his community and their system. So many times people just bring those with them, so they need to be educated about, you know, specific stuff and go to your worship. That makes sense. Because for many of them, Om is the supreme mantra. So then the Vedas will talk about Om. A-U-M, it's actually a combination of three letters. So A is the supreme Lord, U is his internal potency, M is the living entities. So it is the supreme mantra, but of the supreme mantras, then the Hare Krishna is the supreme. It is the original mantra. From that you get your Gayatris, and then from that you get the Brahma Gayatri, from that, you know, and then that includes Om as the bija. So but when it comes reflects into the material world, Om is the last thing on the spiritual side, so therefore the reflection is the first thing on the reflective side. Does that make sense? So that's why it's given such significance. Because it's general, everyone can chant it like that. I mean, everyone can chant Hare Krishna, but may or may not appreciate it at home, and then it's always appreciated because of the nature of the eight syllables and all that. And the technicality, you know.
No, you're talking about blankets just a second ago. I had a specific question from one girl brother saying silk can be used. He's looking at some
silk can be used for?
For worshipping the deities over a period, because cotton cloth has to be changed every day for worshipping. So silk has an extended period. So he was asking what time, you know, can it be used for 7 days, 10 days?
See, silk means it doesn't become contaminated if it doesn't contact anything contaminated. Like that cotton, once you put it on, when you take it off, technically it needs to be washed. So the purity is less than that of silk. The silk, you can put it on, take it off, keep it nicely, and use it again. But if you take it into the bathroom, you eat in it, you sleep in it, then it needs to be washed. So if you're careful with it like that, only use it for the puja and like that, then generally 10 days is the recommended. It would depend upon how much puja you're doing. You know, if you're just doing the morning puja, then you can get 10 days out of it. But if you're doing full day, you know, wearing it for a day, then you want to consider the consideration stuff like that. So you have to use your intelligence. Okay? And what they're saying is if you do puja once a day, then you could use it for 10 days. Does that make sense? But if you're doing puja for much of the day, then you wouldn't do like that. But the main point is that it doesn't develop any odor. You know, so it's not that, okay, I wore it for puja on Janmashtami, then I fold it up, put it away, use it again, take it out, use it on Radhashtami, fold it up, put it away, then use it again, put it on puja, and this way I get 10 times, so for me that's a whole year. That would be the consideration. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the cloth shouldn't have any, you know, smell other than something nice. You know, so unless your body smells like blue lotuses or something naturally, then you may have to worry a little less. But if it's, you know, like others, then you might have to. Does that make sense? In other words, loopholes are not considered a great use of intelligence in the Vedic, you know, perspective. In other words, how to find the easiest way to get things done, you know, because of my not being naturally clean. So I want to find, you know, it's just like, you know, how you say, you know, before I joined, okay, then, you know, our tradition in Northern Scotland, then we only took bath once a week on Wednesday night. So actually, how often do we have to take a bath? What's the minimum I can get away with, you know, as a devotee? You know what I'm saying? That's not the point. The point is you have standards of cleanliness, you know, basic standards, those are maintained. So cloth should be clean, cloth should be fresh, like that. So then if you're able to keep it that way, then it can be used, silk can be used for 10 days. If you can't keep it that way, you know, you do something, you eat, you go to the bath, and you sleep in it, then it has to be washed. It's only good for that one, that time.
He was asking about if you knew any scriptural quote from any...
The scriptural quote? Specifically, I think Madhvacharya is quoted on this. You could ask Krishna Chaitanya. He might know the reference. But finding the quote, we should rub it in people's faces, because the quote is complete. It's not that. That was the difficulty with the Mahabharata, is even though it gave the rules, it would give the exceptions, but it would also give the rules. People would catch the exceptions and drop the rules. So here we go. I can use it for 10 days, but it's 10 days if it doesn't become, you know, stinky, it doesn't become contaminated in any way, and you have to know what contamination is. In other words, it's like this. Someone who, drinking water without touching their mouth, feels the inherent need to wash their hands afterwards because of the subtle impurity that's there of prashad, that they can't then touch other articles to be offered to the Lord, that person could then use that cloth for 10 days. If they're not such a person, I wouldn't recommend it at all. They're the kind of person that goes into the bathroom, and then when they come out, they kind of get the ends of their fingers wet, you know, have worn their socks into the bathroom, and then with those nice, dirty, wet, stinky socks, they tread all over the temple. Besides shooting them or hanging them, I wouldn't recommend that those guys even go near the deity room, let alone wear silk for 10 days. And if you notice, most temples do not have a facility to wash their feet, even though we build them. The bathrooms in this building, we build. See one tap for your feet? Like that. You go to Hungary, there are places to wash your feet before you go into the deity room. They do put taps in to wash your feet so they know it's something important. In India, you see it, they know it's important. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, these subtle rules like this are for people who know the standards of cleanliness and who live like that. Right? People who follow the Pancharatra, like high-grade Brahmins in India, they go to the bathroom, they clean themselves properly, hands, mouth, and feet. They come out of the bathroom, someone else in the family washes their hands, mouth, and feet, again, or at least their feet, with separate water that's not from the bathroom. They can't even touch it themselves. Then they can walk around the house. You know, now we're talking Brahmins. Right? These kind of people understand these rules and how to apply them because they wouldn't want to wear anything unclean. So therefore, they know how to keep things clean, how to put it on, how to take it off, when to do all that. Then these rules are dynamic, they're very useful. Because they're doing so much puja, they wouldn't have that many sets of clothes to maintain it, so therefore they can do this if they're not doing a full day of puja. If it's a full day, then naturally then they're going to do, but otherwise they do that and then they have other clothes they have to put on for different occasions. They're going to wear it in the day, come home in the evening, put it back, put on another set of clothes. So right there you're already dealing with three sets. You know, the full-time majority, if you're going to put that set on, they're going to wear it during the day, so they're going to have that they wear during the puja and other cloth that they'll put on when they do other activities. Lunch or to this or that. Right? So then they'll be dealing with two sets of clothes. So this point is it's not a rule to find a loophole. It's rules to make it easier for those who follow the standards. Okay? So it's meant for them. That's the principle.
Maharaj, some devotees they won't wear silk because it involves the violence of killing thousands and thousands of bugs. So what can you say about that?
Depends what silk you use. If you think all silk is that way, that the ahimsa silk means ahimsa. The reason that raw silk is rough and not smooth is because the bug eats its way out of the cocoon and so it eats a hole in the end. So all the threads that are there, instead of one big long thread that you get like in Chinese silk, you get many short little pieces, and they have to put those together, so it makes a very rough thread. So the silk it makes is very rough. So all these rough silks that you see, those are all ahimsa. So it doesn't take thousands of bugs, and in fact, one bug, you get, you know, hundreds of feet of silk. So, you know what I'm saying? So you also have to be careful. These thousands of bugs may be killed, but it's not that what you're wearing is thousands of bugs. So they're much, the silk's much more efficient than that.
sometimes they even have a few thousand bucks to make all the silk. So that's why generally the devotees use the raw silk. So there's many different forms, there's many different bugs. So you have to, know Indy is one kind, like that, Tata is another. Then you have the Makka, that's generally what devotees use, like that. So these are your various kinds. There's also Kedia. Than that, I think it's coming from Makka, it's the waste of that. So you have many byproducts that are there of it. But in India, it's standard that most all the stuff and what they use in puja is all ahimsa. It's non-violent. Okay?
What about silk saris?
Silk saris. That you don't get so much in ahimsa. You can get them, but you hardly see them nowadays. So not very popular. Okay. So that would be done with So, you use them for the deities or just for that, and that's another thing. Because the point is that one is as non-violent as possible, one is considering that. What is the connection? Right? Because the brahmacharis, vanaprastha, sannyasis, they don't have to worry about it because their life is dedicated to serving the Lord. But the grihasthas, just by becoming a grihastha immediately, then you are culpable for maintaining in your house five slaughterhouses. One is the broom. When you sweep the floor, you kill, billions of living entities. How you keep water, when water flows, then living entities are killed. The grinding stone, the mortar, and then your fire, how you cook, any fires you like, because as soon as you light fires, you kill living entities. Like that. So therefore, then, Grihastha has to study Shastra, take host guests, like that, worship the forefathers, worship, respect the other living entities in the Balidan, and perform yajna, the daily yajnas. So then by chanting, by worshipping Krishna, then basically then speaking, then the worship the spiritual master, reading the scriptures, then is the same thing. So it's taking care of the worship of the sages, because you owe them a debt, because they give you the knowledge by which you can perform your activities. Forefathers, then you have the parampara, I worship the spiritual master parampara and take care of that, because then that goes back to Krishna, the original forefathers. You don't worry about the material dynasty of the forefathers. Right? All living entities, therefore, by the chanting process, they're benefited. Also, then the stupid kusha, we do all these different things like that. Hosting guests, so we serve Vaishnavas, we host guests in this way. So that takes care of the respective problems. So then by the devotional process, then it is accomplished. But otherwise, the worry is greater for a grihastha. So if there's a proper connection, it's worth using the connection with the deities, like this and that, or there is some understanding of the use of it, then you don't have so many difficulty like that. But silk is considered pure, it's considered a good cloth to use. My point would be, is that you're not going to really get away from killing living entities, so therefore you have to reduce it down to only what is necessary. You know what I'm saying? That's what's unavoidable. You have to cook, so you can't not cook. The Jains don't cook, they don't cook, they put something in their mouth, they don't do anything. They carry brooms, they don't know, they sweep away the big ones, but they kill the big ones. The ants don't get stepped on, but the microbes get. You know what I'm saying? So there's always a compromise. Does that make sense? So the connection to Krishna is more important. Otherwise, what is the consideration of non-violence? You know what I'm saying? So is Arjuna fighting in the battlefield, is that wrong? That's violence. You know what I'm saying?
So, in other words, is the concept of nonviolence coming from Krishna's direction, or is it simply coming from our own sentiment?
As long as it's connected.
As long as it's connected, yes. If it's not connected, you have problems. Then you're responsible. That's why it's important that the devotees understand that there are so many rules, and those rules are then put on the side when one worships Krishna. In other words, when it connects to Krishna, then you're dealing directly, so many of these secondary rules and situations aren't necessary like that. So when devotees think there are so many rules, this is like the essence. Like this, what Rupa Goswami gives here, this is 32. These are just essence. Oh, there's so many more. Like that, then it's been reduced. That's why I said don't read too many books. Then you'll find out what is that more. Like that. But it's just like Worship of the Forefathers in Madhava. I think it's at least a full chapter. And in here, the chapter, I don't mean like 30 verses. I mean very elaborate. You know, where you serve, where you can serve. You can't just serve the prasad or the shraddha like anywhere. It has to be in a very nice, natural, peaceful, pure environment. You can't just pick anywhere. Who you pick has to be very highly elevated brahmins. You can't just invite anybody. You know, better one person, two persons, three persons maximum. Never a crowd. You know, like this. How you serve them, everything you serve has to be hot. If it's cold, the whole thing's lost. It has to be served with attention. You can always have to carry everything with two hands. You carry something with one hand, it doesn't work. Yeah, everything has to be done with two hands. Because you have a pot, you carry it with two hands, you put it down. You carry one hand, they break. And then if it breaks and gets all over everybody, all things lost. The quality of after they finish, how they're fed, how you have to see the satisfied after eating, how you deal with them, what you say to them, then afterwards what those guys do the rest of the day. Those Brahmins have to then be maintained and only do pure activities the whole rest of the day. Because for the whole day, the forefathers follow them around. Because they've eaten food. So the benefit of the food goes to the forefathers, so the forefathers follow them. Like that. So it's very, very technical. What you can serve, how it's anything, so technical. Like that. You know, so therefore, it wouldn't be able to be applied. You know, devotees can't even figure out, you know, okay, well, yeah, give you the rice, and then what comes next, right? And then there's, of course, the chapatis, and then the orange juice, and like that, and then, you know, after some time, then the dal goes in the cup, and then the sabji you eat with a spoon, right? Isn't that how it works? You know, while you're sitting there, you take the rice, stick it in the chapati, roll it up, and do that. Isn't that right? The poor holy fathers wouldn't buy that. You know what I'm saying? It just wouldn't work. You get zero benefit for such serving. You know what I'm saying? That's pretty standard serving. So that means that people who know the high standards of serving actual food, how to do it, then there's more rules on top of that. And then the devotees sit around and say, oh, we chant, we don't care for the rules. They don't even know what rules are. They want to hear rules. These aren't rules. These are basics.
What proposed we're talking about, our granddad?
Means whoever has died before you. In other words, you're responsible for your father, and his father. You're responsible for three generations. You don't do the shraddha right, they go to hell. You do the shraddha right, they don't go to hell. That easy. And who does the shraddha right, they get the inheritance. So whoever's going to do it, they're the one that gets the money. Because then with that money, you can perform the proper sacrifice. So it's all connected. Does that make sense? So devotees are saved from all of that. So there's so much that's already removed. Because otherwise, it doesn't matter you're a devotee, you're culpable for those five kinds of slaughterhouses.
But because you chant, you read, you serve Vaishnavas like that, you worship the Lord, then you don't have to worry about it. But if you don't, then it's there. You know what I'm saying?
Doesn't mean that how our brothers want to go to hell because we chant the
That's, you know, probably individual, but basically speaking, those who are chanting, then they can sing 10 generations before in chanting. So that's a lot bigger than the Shraddha Rite itself can be. The Shraddha Rite will only be with four people. But the devotional process deals with 21. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, you're talking about unintentional sins in the Grihastha ashram. It seems like, you know, there's a lot of room for, much more room for Maya in the Grihastha ashram than the say, Brahmachari Sannyas. And it seems like there's that danger of falling into the trap of thinking, you know, I'm practicing my Krishna consciousness at home and I'm doing really well, but actually you never see a lot of those devotees, or you're not really doing much for the preaching mission. So it seems like...
The point is that it's very individualist between them and Krishna. But the point is we're saying this for the individuals who contemplate it and apply it to themselves. Because always in these things, the important thing is that the instruction starts with yourself. Because then we see others, then it's they've got their own situations that they have to deal with. I'm simply commenting on the point where devotees will say, we chant, we don't care for the rules, and then drop the rules that Prabhupada has given. My point is we don't care for the rules means the rules beyond the rules that are given. Because the acharyas are already taking the essence that are important to devotional service, and all those rules that are meant for the karmis and jnanis and yogis that aren't important in the devotional process, those are withdrawn. And even those within the devotional process, those within the Pancharatrika process, a vague process that would deal with Vaishnavas that are interested in, Vaikuntha or other aspects, because they will use a lot more rules because that's the basis of their devotional practice. Their practice is Vaidhisadhana, so therefore it's much more elaborate. So then much of the rules that they would be following is not necessary for the gopis. So what little rules are there, which may seem a lot to someone who grows up with no rules, then is just something just to adjust to, like that. So then it's up to each individual how they adjust to those, how they apply those in their life, you know, in their house and stuff like that. Does that make sense? So basically the important thing is how we take care of it ourselves. That's the more important. Okay. Once we're taken care of like that, then we can help others in understanding and taking care of themselves. Does that make sense? We're not making general comments on what people do like that. We're only commenting on things that they may say to relativize things or to rationalize things that are not important in our philosophy, you know. Does that make sense? That's what we're commenting on. We're not talking about the individual's ability to apply more or less. We're simply talking, we bring these more elaborate technical points out of the bag to create thoughtfulness so that we actually understand what we're dealing with. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the there. Because it simply said, do not enter the temple in a contaminated state. It didn't get into real technical details of what that meant. You know? So it just wants you to be clean. Does that make sense? Because otherwise there are lots of technical rules of what that means. Is that okay? Is that okay? Yeah.
this chapter is dedicated to deity worship or
offenses, because it will be the Seva Paras and the Nama Paras. Nama Paras will also be mentioned.
Somehow, I just wanted to connect my question to this chapter. How can we track how deity worship, whether it's in the temple or home?
Cleanliness and punctuality.
Just deity related to this.
Everything else comes from there. I mean, most of the stuff you see here is according to basically cleanliness and proper behavior. In other words, purity in body, mind, and words. That's basically what you're dealing with. Like that. So therefore, then you will manifest in these other ways. So purity in your, you know, how you behave, how you interact with others, how you physically, you know, how you say, engage yourself. You know, does that make sense? So the essence is that. These others are then refining or pointing out details there.
Probably that's what I'm talking about. Refining the whole process.
Yeah, but it's refining, meaning it's supposed to develop finer qualities. It shouldn't generate pride. Or I'm better because I do these things. No, that one is, you know, one is it's standard to just do these things. It's just the same lifestyle. So it's, you know, it's like you don't you know, sit there and tell everyone, hey, I breathe these things. Yeah, all the time. Even on Sunday. You know what I'm saying? It's the standard. So it's not something to be proud of. It's just something that one does. So these things are then brought up to make one aware, and so that one is very careful, because otherwise one may just do activities by habit. And so then these rules are there so that one stops and thinks and contemplates. One's aware. Because if one's aware, one can be Krishna conscious. If you're unaware, you can't be Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? Is that connected or?
I got the principle.
Yeah, the detail you have to figure out yourself unless you have a specific question. You know what I'm saying? Specific question gets a specific answer. General question gets a general answer.
Well, my question was general.
So you got a general answer.
To go into detail doesn't make sense.
Yes, that's why the principle is there. Understand the principle, then you apply it to your situation. That's why I'm saying him, is that you have to apply these things to your life. Others have to apply it to theirs.
Yeah. So the details here would be specific on details in our homes. For you, what should would be different?
Yeah, it would be different, but it's still based on the same principle. You want to attain the same principle. Not that because it's at home it doesn't matter, but maybe at home it becomes very difficult. You know, 10 kids running around and playing and doing things and, you know, and not necessarily, I say, you know, very expert, you know, distinguishing between the bathroom and other rooms and all these other kinds of things, then it makes it harder, but that's understood because the deity is a guest, but here is the Lord.
The deity
at home is the guest. So in other words, you treat him like he was a guest. Yeah, but you have to know what the definition of guest is. Guest means, atiti means someone who comes unannounced. And that specifically means a Brahman who's coming through for one day. Then the house stops, everything goes around that guest. All facilities, everything happens around them. You never eat before the guest. All the best things are offered to the guest. You try to take care of the guest, make the guest very comfortable. But that's why the definition is atiti means one day.
So that's how
if you yourself extend it for up to 3 days, it's considered.
considered very pious, but the guest himself would never do that. He would come one day. If you invite him for three, like that past 3 days, then they're not in the category of guests anymore, then the house goes back to normal. So now you understand what I mean, guest. I don't mean, you know, you're sitting there watching, you know, the footy match, and then your friend walks in and says, hey, yeah, you know, the drinks are in the fridge, that's not the meaning of guest. That's a friend. Guest means the house stops there in kind of attention. That's the way the deviates. So he is there 365, so special guest. Yeah, that's the difference between the home and the temple. So in other words, the home, what you have is the best you have, that's what's offered. You know, you have nothing, and you offer the best of nothing. But in the temple, you have standards to meet those standards. That's the difference. You know, so it adjusts according to that, it's understood. But the principles of it, the rules of it, then are basically the same. You know, those who follow the Pancharatra process, then those who are initiated into the Pancharatra process, you know, another sampradaya, they get a deity along with the initiation, and they worship that deity basically in the same rules as in the temple. But it won't be as many times or with as much opulence, but technically it's exactly the same worship. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a game. Like that, the one just as one life. Oh, I like to have the deity, though I gotta have Radha and Krishna, but I'll only take care of them once every Ekadasi. It doesn't exactly work like that. I'm like, got a girlfriend, really great, you know, like that. Oh, so what do you do? You going out? They said, no, I keep her in the closet, and I only take her out once every 2 weeks. You know? Really great, you know? You know, it doesn't work like that. So the whole point is it's not a game, it's a matter of properly committing. So therefore you take out a form of deity worship that you can maintain. And we always have to remember that pictures are one of the 8 bona fide deities. Like that arch of beings that we worship them in that. You know, saying that's why they come in that form, so they can have a bath. Pictures don't need baths. They're not kind of allergic to baths. So therefore, if you're not going to bathe the deity or dress the deity, then they come as pictures, so you get the same exact benefit. They come as archas, so you can bathe and dress them. And so depending on what service you can render, that's what you do. Okay?